Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and I am back for another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, midweek market update. I'm Peter Schiff, host of the show, president of Euro Pacific Capital, the author of the books Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and The Little Book of Bull Moves in Bear Markets. Those books have been hanging out at number one and number two on Amazon for the investment category. If you haven't read the books or if you haven't gotten the new book, they are available also in bookstores, although I hear that even many of the stores are already selling out of The Little Book. Anyway, the number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We do this show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. The show can be heard on my website, www.europac.net, also on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. And the show is now available via podcast, the rebroadcast. And so if anybody you know wants to listen to the shows, or if in general you want to try to hear the shows through podcasts, you can sign up for that on my website. No upcoming television appearances that I know about. I did Bloomberg this week. I think it was yesterday. I was on for an hour. If you haven't seen that, it should be up on my website. I think there's already clips of it on YouTube. I was on NPR Radio today. I forgot the show. I'll be doing NPR Market Watch tomorrow, whatever, you know, so you'll be able to hear me. I was supposed to do that today, but I missed, I wasn't able to get it done in time. But you will be able to hear me tomorrow on Market Watch. My next scheduled appearance is coming up at the New Orleans Investment Conference. I think it's the weekend of the 13th. I'm speaking on Friday and Saturday down in New Orleans. If you haven't signed up for that conference, it's still not too late to do so. It's always a very interesting conference. There's a lot of other speakers down there. And I'm sure with what's going on in the economy, it will certainly be a worthwhile couple of days if you have a chance to make it down to New Orleans. If you live in the New Orleans area, certainly try to register. It's not a free conference. I think it costs $500 or $600. And if you do register, I think make sure to let them know that you heard about it through Euro Pacific Capital. I think I get a little bit of a referral fee for people who sign up. So make sure to mention that you heard about it from Euro Pacific. Also, you know, interestingly enough, I agreed to speak today at two upcoming events. One of them is going to be in March at a conference in Chicago from the name of the organization now escapes me, but it's an institutional conference, about 3,000 people, Morningstar. And I'm going to be the keynote speaker there, which is interesting. And also, I got an invitation today, and I accepted it, to speak at the Global Competitiveness Conference in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And a lot of very, very big speakers there. And it's interesting that I'm starting to get contacted more and more now by more of the mainstream investment conferences or just the media to talk about the economy and what's going on. So it's interesting that as more and more of my predictions are coming true, that more and more people are finding out about me. In fact, I found out that the people in Saudi Arabia who are putting this thing together, the reason that they invited me is they saw some of the videos that featured me on YouTube. And in fact, while I am on that subject, it's interesting that anybody, if you watch Bill Maher on HBO, this week's show, and I think it might still be repeating, they had a guest on the show, Art Laffer. And Art Laffer came on, and if you haven't seen this clip, I did a debate with Art Laffer on Kudlow's show, Larry Kudlow's show. Kudlow wasn't there, so it was hosted by somebody else. But I did a debate with him, about an 8-9 minute debate, And the YouTube video of that debate has been seen by over 220,000 people now. So obviously it's making the rounds on the internet. And one of the people that saw it was Bill Maher, or maybe one of his writers. And so he had Art Laffer on the show. And the first thing he said to him, was, you know, Art, I don't mean to, you know, ambush you or anything, but, you know, about 2 years ago you made an on-air bet with a guy by the name of Peter Schiff. And Peter said that the we were borrowing too much money, that the housing bubble was going to burst, that all that phony wealth was going to disappear, that we were going to have a crash, and you said that everything was great. The worst thing we'd have is a small slowdown. And he said, Art, I want to know, have you paid Peter? Have you paid off that bet yet? And of course, Laffer had to admit that he hadn't paid it off. He bet me a penny. I wanted to bet more than a penny, but the most he would bet was a penny. But, you know, he didn't just bet a penny. He bet his honor. And what he said is that the loser has to write the winner a note and admit that he was wrong. Well, it's been over 2 years. I've got no note from Art Laffer. I got no penny from Art Laffer. I haven't got a thing from him. Meanwhile, now he's promoting a new book, The End of Prosperity, you know, which, you know, he tried to say on this show that the reason he was wrong on his forecast was because he can only forecast out for 9 months. He tried to say that economic forecasts can only go for 9 months and that nobody can know what's going to happen more than 9 months out, which is obviously completely ridiculous. And, you know, and the guy still has not, he hasn't called me, he hasn't apologized to me, he hasn't done anything. But, of course, we called the Bill Maher show to see if I can get on Bill Maher, and they're telling us that, you know, they're all booked up, they don't have any, any room for any guests. So we'll see what happens, but for now they're telling us that that they don't have any room for him. But it would have been interesting if I could have gotten on the show. Anyway, I noticed that the lines are free, which is kind of odd. They normally fill up right away. But the number to call, 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Well, today, Fed cut rates 50 basis points. We're all the way back down to 1%. 1%. That's the same insanely low rate that produced the housing bubble, that led to the subprime mortgages and the ARMs, and that caused all the problems. And here's the Fed just repeating all the same mistakes, slashing interest rates. In fact, I was watching on Lou Dobbs today, and they're talking, they have these three economists, and they're talking about how the fact that the government, you know, gave $125 billion to all these banks. And they're pissed off that the banks aren't lending it out. And they were talking about going in there and firing people and forcing the banks to loan the money. Now, this is all ridiculous, right? These are profit-seeking companies. If there are profitable loans to be made, the banks would make them. The problem is they don't want to loan the money out because the people can't pay it back. I mean, why should banks loan money to Americans to buy houses and cars when they're not going to be able to pay the money back? I mean, that's how we got into this mess, by making loans we shouldn't have made. And, you know, now that the government is reliquefying these banks, I mean, they're using the money to shore up their balance sheet. They're using the money to replace the capital they blew by making bad loans in the past. You know, the government can't force these banks to make loans that are not economically viable. I mean, why should Americans be borrowing more money? They're up to their eyeballs in debt. We're all broke. In fact, there was an article today on the front page of the New York Times which went over something I've been talking about on this radio show for years, something I wrote about in my book, which is the developing credit card crisis, where credit card delinquencies are now at record highs. Credit card companies are cutting back on their new card offers. They're cutting back on people's limits. And this is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and ultimately the whole market for credit card debt is going to implode because Americans can't pay this money back. I mean, for a while they were able to stay ahead of their credit cards because they were paying them off with home equity loans. For a while, a lot of Americans were transferring their balances from one card to the next because you would get, you know, six months no interest. But, you know, they've run out of the ability to do that, and people are losing their jobs, they've lost their home equity, they're struggling to make ends meet with higher prices for food and energy, and they can't pay their credit cards. And you know what? Why bother? You know, these are non-recourse loans. So this is another crisis that I've been speaking about and been warning about, which is now unfolding. Now, there's been continued volatility in the markets, and, you know, I wasn't able to do the radio show last week. You know, two of the guys from the LA office did the show, and I want to thank them, John Downs and Stephen Echeverria. I got quite a few emails from people who thought they did a pretty good job. So it's good to know that there are people who can cover for me. I had to give a presentation up in New Jersey, and I had a live speech that conflicted with the radio show, which is why I couldn't do the show. But anyway, whenever I can't do it, it seems that there's plenty of backup people at Euro Pacific Capital. But anyway, in the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of action in the markets. So the dollar up until yesterday or today has continued to move straight up, defying logic. But today, the dollar was down sharply. In fact, between yesterday's high and today, the dollar index dropped 4 whole points. The Canadian dollar was up 5% today alone. Off of yesterday's lows, the New Zealand and Australian dollars have basically rose 10% in 24 hours. So we're getting a pretty big reversal in the dollar. We'll see if this carries through. You know, the dollar index got all the way up to 88.5 yesterday. It's back below 86. I think there's going to be some short-term support at around 82. But ultimately, if we can break back below 80, which I think we will do relatively soon, then I think the stage is set for a spectacular drop in the dollar. Remember, the dollar has been rising for reasons totally unrelated to the fundamentals of the dollar. It's been rising strictly due to deleveraging and redemptions and all this. And so this is an artificial bid in the dollar. It will not last. It is a head fake. I think the real move in the dollar is going to be a collapse. Everything the Fed is doing, everything the government is doing is undermining the dollar, which was already weak, and it's just going to be a lot weaker when this rebalancing is done. You know, meanwhile, people are trying to look at the dollar rally and try to rationalize it with fundamentals, trying to say, well, the dollar is going up because as bad as things are here, they're worse everyplace else, or the dollar is going up because America was the first into the crisis, we're going to be the first out of the crisis. This is nonsense. None of this is true. The dollar is going up purely for technical reasons related to this deleveraging. It is not worse every place else. It's the worst here. And we're not going to be the first out of this crisis. We're going to be in this crisis for years and years and years. The rest of the world has a temporary crisis in that they loaned us money and now we can't pay them back. So they have a financial hit. They've lost some money on some bad investments. But the underlying fundamentals for the global economy are sound. It's America that is in serious, serious trouble because we're the ones that are broke. We're the ones that can't pay our debts. We're the ones that are going to get cut off from future loans. And so we're going to have to survive without foreign products, without foreign savings, and we can't do it. Meanwhile, we're about to bring in a new administration that is going to thoroughly destroy the economy with additional regulation at the time when we can barely handle the regulations we have. Higher taxes when we can't even handle the taxes we have, and a bigger government when the government we already have is too big that we can't afford it. We are in serious, serious trouble as a nation. It is not being reflected right now in the foreign exchange markets, but I am confident it will be. And, of course, the main reason that the Euro-Pacific Capital accounts have dropped to the extent they have is because of the strength of the dollar. The strength of the dollar is responsible for probably half of the declines, probably more than that, because as the dollar is strengthened, that's also undermined commodities, which has undermined the markets and commodity economies in which we've invested, and commodities themselves. So I think as the dollar reverses, it is going to help reignite the bull market in commodities, which will be very bullish for places like Canada, New Zealand, Australia. And, of course, the companies in the energy space and the mining space will all benefit. And I think once the upward pressure on the dollar is off and, you know, you're not seeing all these flows into the U.S. dollar, that will support foreign markets because their currencies will be strengthening. And I think that will undermine our market. I think one of the reasons that the U.S. market hasn't fallen even to a greater degree is because the dollar has been supporting it. This phony rally in the dollar has put an artificial bid, I think, in our markets. I think without this dollar strength, the Dow would be a lot lower than 9,000, where it is now. And so I think once the dollar turns around, there will be a lot more weakness to come in the U.S. market. But ultimately, that could be the end of the weakness in the foreign markets because there is tremendous value. I am continuing to be amazed at the PEs and the dividend yields that we're able to get, and I continue to add money both to my personal account and encouraging clients to buy into this dip as an opportunity of a lifetime, as a fire sale of fire sales, types of bargains that we'll likely never see again as investors, all because of this major, major collapse that is underway, but with reality is nothing more than the bankruptcy of the United States, and that's basically what it is. Whether we want to admit it or not, this country is broke, and obviously the people who have loaned us a lot of money are having a hard time dealing with that fact, but you know what? The sooner they deal with it, the better. The sooner they can, cut their losses and move on, the better. You know, this is exactly the kind of stuff I'm going to be talking about when I'm in Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to be there. You know, it's sponsored by the King, the Royal Highness of Saudi, Prince Abdullah, whatever his name is. But there'll be a lot of big people there from the Arab world, a lot of the guys that are in charge of all these sovereign wealth funds. And if they haven't woken up to this reality by now, they're certainly going to wake up to it when I'm finished talking to them and telling them the truth about what's going on in the global economy and the mistakes that the world is making. You know, Saudi Arabia has their currency pegged to the U.S. dollar. And that currency peg is the source of all the problems in Saudi Arabia. And the solution to their economic problems is to depeg from the U.S. dollar. But, of course, as nations depeg from the U.S. dollar, our phony economy collapses. And, of course, I don't think, to me, you know, encouraging these economies to sever their ties to the dollar, even though that helps bring on an economic collapse here, I don't think that in the long run that's a negative. I think that's the best thing that can happen to the United States is that the people who are enabling us stop enabling us. It's like if I go to a drug pusher and they try to convince somebody to stop selling drugs to somebody, then in the short run that person might be upset because he no longer can get any drugs, but in the long run he's better off. I think that's the same thing. The Saudis and the Chinese and the Japanese, they're not doing us any favors by loaning us money to consume, because all they're doing is causing our economy to go deeper and deeper off kilter. We're digging ourselves into a deeper hole. Ultimately, they're going to cut us off anyway, and the sooner they do it, the better it's going to be. I mean, it's already going to be pretty bad because they waited so long, but you know what? It doesn't make the sooner they stop doing it, the quicker we can stop digging ourselves into a hole, and the sooner we can start filling it back up again. The only problem is, right, we might not be able to dig our way out of this hole because we're going to have the Obama administration, most likely, in our way, taxing and regulating the entrepreneurs to death and printing and borrowing and spending and doing all these things. So unfortunately, if the world does cut us off, we're not going to be able to move in the right direction because the government is going to be doing all the wrong things. The government is going to be doing all the things that created the Great Depression, you know, which again is another big theme I see in television these days. Everybody is talking about how we can't repeat the mistakes of the Depression, how we can't do what Hoover did, which was nothing. We can't just let the free market work. We've got to intervene as complete revisionist history. I think I talked about it before, that we had a Great Depression because Hoover didn't let the free market work as his Secretary of Treasury, Andrew Mellon, wanted. Hoover intervened with all kinds of crazy things. And then when Roosevelt came in, he simply took Hoover's failed policies and made them bigger. And it was the government that created the Great Depression because they did exactly what Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke are doing now. And the big difference, of course, is that the economy was fundamentally much sounder then than it is now. And, of course, we're repeating the same mistakes of the Japanese. But, again, the difference is the Japanese bubble that they had in stocks and real estate, that bubble happened against the backdrop of an otherwise sound economy. The Japanese were producing. The Japanese were saving. But their central bank was too easy, and they had a bubble. The bubble burst, and the government made the process of a lot worse. They dragged out the economic malaise with all their interference. But the fact of the matter is they were interfering in a healthy economy, so the Japanese economy was able to withstand all the meddling of their government. The economy would have been stronger without it, but it was so fundamentally solid that they still muddled through. That's not the case here. Japan was the world's biggest creditor. We're the world's biggest debtor. We're not exporting, we're importing. We're not saving, we're borrowing to consume. So we can't afford a gigantic government bailout the way the Japanese did. Our bailout will break us, you know, will bankrupt us, we'll go through hyperinflation. We're in much, much worse shape. You know, I hear people saying, you know, we have to avoid Japan. No, we have no hope of getting off as easy as Japan. What we need to try to avoid is Zimbabwe. But it turns out that we're not going to avoid that. It seems like Ben Bernanke and Paulson, that's the exact path. They're taking us down. Anyway, let me quickly go to the phones and start taking some calls. I think the first person on hold is Raymond in Washington, D.C. You there, Raymond?
Yes, Peter. Hi. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Hi, I have two quick questions for you. My question number one is that when do you think the U.S. Treasury will or U.S. bonds will collapse? That's my question. In near future, where do you see that, or when do you see that?
And then, so right now, I think U.S. Treasuries are again they're being supported by this deleveraging, by this flight to safety, or perceived safety. But ultimately, the bubble in the U.S. bond market is going to burst, and I don't think it's 5 or 10 years out. I mean, I think it's a matter of months away, maybe a year tops. And when that happens, U.S. bonds are going to collapse, and long-term interest rates are going to start to move higher, a lot higher, and that's going to further exacerbate the problems in the economy. And it's going to be the same thing. You've got commodity prices that have come down. The commodity prices are setting up for an explosive move to new highs. And, so we're going to have more inflation. We're going to have higher interest rates. All of this is going to make the economy much, much worse.
And if I'm not mistaken, that will have a direct impact on the price of gold, which is...
Yeah, look, the price of gold, I think, is just going to go through the roof. I mean, we've had this pullback. We've had an even bigger pullback in mining stocks. Mining stocks, and, I talk about the mining stocks I own. The mining stocks indexes dropped about 80%. 80%. Gold stocks dropped 80% in 2 or 3 months, even though the price of gold only dropped by about 20%. Gold stocks dropped 80%. That is absolutely unreal. And again, it shows that this is not real investing going on. This is panic liquidation. This is margin call. This is forced selling. The fundamentals have absolutely nothing to do with this. And when the pressure is off, one of these days we're going to see gold up $100, $150, $200 a day, and they go up $100, $200 again. And I think one of these days the gold stocks aren't even going to open. There's going to be so many bids, they're not even going to be able to handle the order imbalance. So the things could double or triple in one day. Which is why I don't think people have to worry right now when they're buying these stocks. You don't have to worry if they go down. It doesn't even matter. They're so ridiculously cheap. So what if they get cheaper? Eventually they're going to go through the roof, and no one will ever be able to buy these stocks this cheap.
Right. And do you have any comments on the price of platinum?
Platinum? I think platinum's a huge buy. I recently bought some more platinum myself in my account at the Perth Mint. And, platinum was at $2,000 an ounce. And when gold was at 1,000, now platinum is, 800 and gold is 750. I mean, the spread between platinum and gold is very low. I mean, maybe even platinum will dip below gold. But I think that's a fabulous buying opportunity. Platinum normally has a good premium, and I think platinum's going higher. I mean, right now, there's also the weakness because of the weakness in the auto sales. But, that's going to turn around because I think as the dollar turns around, sure, U.S. auto sales are going to be weak. General Motors and Ford are going bankrupt. Of course, the government is talking about a massive bailout now to try to keep them in business, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we should just let these companies fail. And, the thing is, we need an auto industry in this country, and we'd have one. But what we don't need is General Motors and Ford. We don't need to prop these companies up. They have bad management. They're losing billions of dollars. Let them go out of business. Let somebody else come up and buy up their plants and buy and renegotiate their contracts and actually manufacture cars profitably, right? Because obviously the people at GM don't know how to do that. The people at Ford don't know how to do that. If they did, they'd be making money. I mean, look at all the plants that Toyota's operating in the United States. They're making a ton of money, right? What the problem is, the bad management. And when the government comes in and bails out companies, they prop up bad management. That's why they should let all the Wall Street firms fail. They should let the airlines fail. They should let all the companies that have been mismanaged fail so somebody else can step in and do a better job.
Right. Right. And then do you think oil will stay at these prices? It's unbelievable.
Well, no, I think oil's going higher. I think we'll be back above $100 a barrel. We might be back above $100 a barrel before the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. Everything is so irrational these days. So, There's no...
Yeah, look, you know, I don't care. You know, the market oftentimes is very irrational because most of the people who are investing money are clueless. Most of the people who are running giant funds don't know anything. These are the same people that bought into the dot-com mania. These are the same people that bought all the subprime mortgages. And, you know, they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And the market on any given day reflects what the majority of people think. And the majority of people are wrong. So that's why we tune all this stuff out. That's why I don't get discouraged. If my stocks now are going against me, it doesn't matter to me. If the dollar's going up, I don't care. Because I know in the end, I'm right. And the fundamentals are going to win out over the long run. And I'm investing for the long run. I'm not investing for short-term movements.
I've been buying a lot of Canadian dollar for the past 2 months. I'm so glad.
Yeah, look, the Canadian dollar was up 5% today. Like, it had a huge drop. The Canadian dollar got as high as $1.10, I think, a year ago, and it was down below 80 cents, yesterday.
Right.
Back above 81 today, and who knows? I mean, I think it could have a huge move up, and I'm just continuing to get these foreign currencies at these prices.
Yeah. Good luck to your trip to your Saudi Arabia. There was an article in the one of these papers the other day that the Gulf Bank that's in Kuwait, people are withdrawing money in panic. And the reason for that is that they have made some investment in derivatives in the European banks. And so, but the government of Kuwait has stepped in and they are guaranteed all the bank accounts. But the Dubai's real estate bubble is bursting, and the prices is falling over there. So it's going to be, everyone knew that this was going to happen in any days, but it seems like that has started. So
mm-hmm.
that region is going to be impacted as well
mm-hmm.
because they have lost a lot of money in Wall Street as well.
Look, the whole world lost money in America. Right. I mean, we conned them into loaning us money. There was an article, I put it up on my website, and it was in a Chinese paper on the front page. And basically it said the U.S. has squandered the world's wealth. We need to dump the dollar. Countries need to abandon the dollar and go to other currencies. And so the world is figuring this out.
Yeah, I read that article. So why don't they do that? You know, everyone
will
talk about it.
They will.
It's preventing.
It's only a matter of time.
Bandit.
Yeah. Yeah, they will. And if they're not doing it now, they're certainly going to figure it out after I finish lecturing them.
Okay. Good luck to you then.
All right.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Apparently, I'm just finding out that a lot of people are having trouble accessing the radio show, that there's some kind of error. Obviously, you know, if you're not able to hear the show, you can't hear me talk about it. I'm trying to look into it now to see if there's something going on. Here's what I'm being told, that it's a capacity issue, that too many people are trying to listen at once and people are getting locked off. Now, I thought I took care of that. We went to our own server so we wouldn't have a capacity issue. And I don't know, apparently so many more people are now trying to listen to the show that it's overwhelming even the additional capacity that we have. And I'm going to have to look into that. But anyway, let me go to the next caller. And I apologize to anybody who's listening now to this show delayed, who tried to listen live and who couldn't. I will figure out what the problem is. Tom calling from Illinois.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Not bad. Hey, first, before I get to my questions, I just want to say I enjoyed your appearance on Bloomberg yesterday. It's kind of nice to see in a forum where it's just you and the host instead of you and three other people kind of screaming at the top of their lungs, you know. So I learned a lot from your appearances, and I'd like to see you in that format more often if possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, whenever they invite me, I mean, it's not that often that you can get that much airtime, you know.
Yeah. Hey, a couple questions about China. One, can you explain to me, since the Chinese currency is not convertible, why we care what the Central Bank of China's interest rate is? And secondly, in short term, can you tell me U.S. versus the RMB, where you think things are going?
Well, first of all, you know, because their currency is kind of pegged to ours, yet their interest rates are much higher. So ultimately what that would mean would be people would want to, you know, borrow dollars to buy RMB, because the relationship is kind of pegged. The worst case scenario is that the dollar goes down slightly, which is what's been happening. So when they have high interest rates, it would create all the extra reserves because people would want to buy RMB. Generally, what happens is when you peg your currency to the dollar, you have to lower your interest rates to our rates, which is what's happening in Saudi Arabia and other countries. They're being forced to copy the Fed's monetary policy, which is a source of massive inflation in countries like Saudi Arabia. And the only solution is to dump the dollar. But everybody is afraid to do it. Everyone's afraid to bankrupt this country because they're all thinking, oh, my God, what are we going to do if America goes broke? Well, they haven't figured out that we are broke already, and the more money they give us, the more they're going to have to give us. The world is not loaning us money because we can't pay it back. They're giving it to us. And we're going to be asking the world for probably $10 trillion or more over the next 4 or 5 years. And why would they want to flush that money down the toilet? And, of course, if they're dumb enough to do it, then we're going to be asking for more. And I think the world is going to figure out sometime soon that letting us go broke is much cheaper than propping us up. And it's going to happen soon. No doubt in my mind.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think Dave is online from California. We're not getting many calls, so I think not many people are actually listening because of these theoretical technical problems. But if you can hear me, the lines are going to be free after I talk to David. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597, and we'll take David in California.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'd like to ask you how you expect the international monetary system to change in the coming months and years. There's this meeting on November 15th. What do you think is going to come out of it?
I'd like to see us go back to a gold standard internationally, and I think we might. You know, I read some comments from Trichet recently saying that the world needs to go back to a Bretton Woods type agreement. He said we need some monetary discipline. Now, whenever central bankers talk about monetary discipline, they're talking about gold because that's where the discipline comes from. You know, without gold, there is no discipline. Central banks can just do whatever they want. When you have gold, that imposes a discipline on the central bank because now they can't just keep creating money unless they have the gold to back it up. And so there's rumblings out of Europe, there's rumblings out of Asia. The world is starting to figure out that America is the source of the economic problems around the world. It's we have taken advantage of the dollar's reserve currency status, and the Chinese are right. We squandered the world's wealth. We got the world to loan us money, and we blew it on consumption. And this is creating, we're the source of all these problems, and the sooner the world realizes that we cannot have a dollar standard, because the longer the dollar remains the reserve currency, the worse the world's problems are going to become, because we're going to keep printing money and keep issuing it, and the world's going to have to keep buying it up, and we're going to go deeper and deeper into debt, and we're going to consume more and more and more, and we're going to drag the entire world economy down with us. And the sooner the world cuts us off, the better off we're all going to be, not just the world, but America. Because the longer we're living on this borrowed money, the worse the fundamentals for our economy get, and the more difficult it's going to be for us ever to rebuild a viable economy. So the sooner it stops, the sooner we're forced to make these difficult changes and live within our means, the better. And, you know, the only thing that's going to force change is a crisis. And right now, foreigners are preventing the crisis by enabling the activity, by buying our bonds and by buying our currency. All they're doing is postponing a day of reckoning that gets worse and worse every day they prop us up.
Okay, and you mentioned earlier you're going to the Middle East. Could you talk a little bit about that just for a second?
Yeah, I got invited, you know, to be a speaker. You know, they're paying all my expenses, and they said they'd give me the red carpet treatment to come and speak at this global competitiveness conference in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And a lot of very, very influential people are going to be there. I mean, presidents of countries and CEOs of major companies. And, you know, all the big money people in the Arab world will be there, and, you know, people that handle these sovereign wealth funds and all this stuff. And so I think it's a very interesting venue for me to be speaking in front of these people. And it's interesting that, you know, that the people from Saudi Arabia, you know, went out of their way to contact me, wanting me to speak there. mainly because they had seen some of the videos of me on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube, there's almost 1,200 videos of me on Fox and Bloomberg and, you know, and CNBC and CNN and all over. And people are realizing that, you know, I've called this thing correctly, that obviously I've got some understanding where I was able to predict with uncanny clarity what happened in the housing market, what happened in the mortgage market, what happened in the commodities markets, what happened in the housing market, what's, you know, things that have gone on, and so they want to hear from me.
Okay, just one last question, I'll let you go. Given the problems you talk about in the U.S., do you think Americans should consider moving abroad, and are you planning to...
Yeah, I mean, I think they should. I haven't moved myself. I certainly think that that should be considered. I have a whole chapter on that in my new book, The Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets, where I actually talk about the potential need to emigrate. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that, but I'm saying that maybe it makes sense to have a contingency plan just in case. I do think that there is the potential for things to get very bad in this country, because I believe that the government is going to continue to pursue foolhardy policies that will interfere with the market and create unprecedented problems in this country, potentially shortages of food and energy, riots, civil unrest. I think a lot of problems are going to come. I think a lot of people are going to lose their jobs, and because of the type of tax and regulatory structure we're going to have, they're not going to have any new jobs to replace it. See, if the government stayed out of the way and let the free market work, a lot of people in the service sector would, in fact, lose their jobs. A lot of people on Wall Street, a lot of people in housing, a lot of people working in the educational or in healthcare and in the service sector would lose their jobs. But you know what? There'd be brand new jobs in production and manufacturing and other areas that would be developed. They would be able to have gainful employment. But based on what the government is doing, they're going to inhibit this transition. And they're going to make sure that when people lose their jobs, there are no new jobs to take their place.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. Next caller is Gerald from New York.
It's Gerard.
Gerard, sorry about that.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. Peter, listen, I joined you about 6 months ago. I am totally unhappy with what is going on.
Well, I mean, look where you know, it has to do with the timing. I mean, you got in, unfortunately, when the dollar was at its absolute lows and before the majority of the stock declined. So there's nothing we could do. How much, you know, what percentage of your portfolio, of your net worth, did you invest with us?
About 80% or 90%
of your entire portfolio. I mean, of all your savings, you didn't keep anything liquid. You didn't have anything in precious.
Yeah, I have things liquid, but what am I going to wait? Am I waiting for my return till the Messiah comes again?
Excuse me. Oh no! I mean, we bought you dividend paying stocks, right?
Well, yeah, but
the dividends are coming in.
I've lost probably close to $500,000, and what am I going to get? Dividend stocks paying on
$500,000? You're not losing anything. Remember,
as opposed to $1.5 million.
No, you're not losing anything. Have you sold anything?
No, I haven't sold anything.
Right, well, then how? What have you lost?
I understand. I was making 4 to 5 or 6% here. And I came over to you
you're making more than that. I'm sure the dividend yield that you're getting on your portfolio now is more than that.
Is more than that?
Your yield, the dividend yield.
How can it be more than that when I'm not making my original investment?
Saying your stocks are down. But I'm not talking about the stock. I'm not talking about the current market value of the stocks. I'm talking about the dividends that your stocks are throwing off, the income that the account is generating.
Say that again?
The income, the account, let's assume somebody put, what did you invest, $1 million, $1.5 million?
Yes.
All right, so let's say you invested $1.5 million and we invested it in a portfolio with an 8% yield, right? Even if that account now is only worth $1 million and you're down $500,000 on paper, that 8% dividend yield is still being paid. You're still getting 8% a year income on the $1.5 million that you put up. Now, sure, given today's market situation with today's exchange rates and today's stock prices, if you were to liquidate that portfolio, you would take a substantial loss. But if you don't liquidate the portfolio, if you simply collect the dividends, which is what we planned on doing all along, in 2 or 3 years, that $1.5 million portfolio could be $5 million. And it still isn't going to matter because we're still not going to sell it. We're still going to continue to collect the dividends. And the reason you own that portfolio is because if you kept your $1.5 million in the bank, earning whatever you were earning, at some point in time, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you'd be broke because that $1.5 million wouldn't buy you anything. That's the problem. Yeah. Now, sure, had we waited 6 months, we could have bought you a lot more stock for your money, but, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, you know.
I'm not asking for a crystal ball. I'm just, you know, stop saying these stockbroker platitudes that we're going to make.
I'm not saying the stockbroker platitude. Look, every single stock market in the world went down by about 50% or more in dollar terms. You know, the Hang Seng market dropped 60% in a few months. It's cheaper than it was in 1998. In the aftermath of the Asian economic crisis. I did not think that Hong Kong stocks would be trading at 1 and 2 and 3 times earnings. But they're not going to stay down here. You know, they're not going to stay at this. They're not going to be at these prices when you sell. They're only at these prices for people who are leveraged up and who are being forced to sell right now. That's my point. There's no doubt in my mind that probably even a year from now, your account will be worth more than when you set it up. And the fact that it's worth less right now isn't going to affect you. In fact, it affects you in a positive way.
You know what? I'm reading in triple for your book. You know, you had said that the .com. I'm in a couple stocks or 3 or 4 stocks, more than a couple, that have gone down more than...
Oh, I know that, but they're not. Look, there are some stocks in China.
I mean, Peter, what happened in .com bomb?
But it's a difference. When the .com collapsed, companies that had no value collapsed, right? The stocks that you have that have collapsed have real earnings. They're trading... The stocks are now trading at 1 and 2 times earnings. Some of these stocks are paying 30% dividends. But the difference is the dot-coms had no dividends. They had no value. And when they collapsed, they stayed down because there was no real value behind them. The stocks that we bought you that are down have tremendous real value. They're real companies with huge assets and huge earnings. These are fire sale prices. There's a huge difference between a worthless company that was a bubble collapsing and a valuable company going from a P.E. of 10 to a P.E. of 1. This is not the same situation. Trust me on that. I didn't buy any of the dot-coms. I understood that. I own most of the stocks that you probably own, some of the ones that are down a lot, and all I've done personally is buy more, and I think it's a fantastic opportunity. I'm not worried about the fact that I put some money in at higher prices. I'm getting more money in at ridiculous prices, and even if you're telling me that you don't have the wherewithal to put in any more money, well, I think you're still fine. It's not, you know, it's, you're not going to be hurt a year or two from now when these stocks are higher than what you paid. And we made these investments with a long-term time horizon. We didn't tell anybody to invest with us because we said in 6 months you'll be able to cash out with a profit. No one ever said that.
I didn't. But listen, 6 months is different from 5 or 10 years.
Look, I understand what you're concerned about. I mean, if I thought that the stocks would fall this much, if I knew it for sure, I would have told everybody don't invest and wait. But I thought the underlying problem is too severe, that the problems with the dollar are too great to risk sitting in dollars hoping that the dollar was going to rally as this crisis unfolded. But I did mention in my book, did you read Crash Proof?
Of course I did.
Yeah, well, in that book, I specifically said in my chapter on liquidity, I have a whole chapter, read it, that I said initially as our economy started to collapse and our market went down, that there could be a big sell-off in the foreign stocks that we own. I said that. And I said that's why you want to keep some money in reserve to take advantage of those bargains if they come up. Now, I didn't know if it would happen for sure, but I thought it was a possibility. But I didn't think it would mean that we were wrong in our strategy.
Peter, listen to me. A P.E. at 10% at $100 is $30, okay? At $10, it's $3. So where is the, what are we going to live on?
No, your yield, the dollars hasn't come down. I mean, the yields have come down a little bit because the exchange rates. So if you're getting dividends in Canada or you're getting dividends in Australian dollars, the dividends are less valuable today because those currencies have come down. But the earnings of these companies have not come down. Some stocks, yes. The companies that are in the commodity space, like companies that are mining base metals or oil and gas companies, their earnings have come down because the prices of these commodities have come down. But those things are not going to stay down. And when the commodity prices go back up, their earnings are going to come back up. And so their dividends will come back up. But the vast majority of the companies that you own, which are not commodity companies, their earnings have not been affected, and the dividends are going to still be there, just like we told you they would. But anyway, I don't want to keep having the same conversation on the air, but if you want to talk about it more, feel free to call me personally in my office. You know, you can call me at 800-727-7922. Okay. Call me tomorrow. I'll talk to you about it off the air.
Thank you.
All right. Anyway, and I understand the situation that this gentleman is in. I mean, anybody that started with Euro Pacific Capital in the last year, you know, is way down. I mean, if they were to cash out today, but of course that's true if they, you know, the Dow is down 40%. I mean, there's nothing that you could have done with your money except kept it in cash where you're better off today. But, you know, that's looking at this at one brief snapshot in time. I don't think it's going to look this way a year from now or 2 years from now. And I still think that people who invested with me at the top of the market, like this gentleman did, who are way down right now, I still think a year or two from now, they'll be much better off than the people that stayed in cash the whole time. Anyway, let me go to Zach from Colorado.
Well, Peter, thanks for taking my call. I've been a client with you for 3 months right now, and I feel Gerard's pain, but like you said, just stick it out, and I think we'll be fine. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but with that being said, I do keep an open mind that there might be some political agenda ahead. That being said, with the dollar that we all can clearly see is literally lifted on, you know, just fathoms, what to say that the other currencies that we hold up some of our earnings in might disappear as well?
Well, look, all the currencies are fiat currencies, right? So we got to look and choose between the lesser of the various evils, monetary evils. But you have to look at the underlying fundamentals of the rest of the world. The real problem is in America, because when you have a fiat currency, what gives it value are your exports, right? Because people want to use your currency to buy the products that you have. And so in America, since we have this huge trade deficit, there is no real need for dollars. But all these other countries that are exporting products, there's actually a need for their currency because we want to buy their stuff. So on a relative basis, there's something backing up their currency. And these other countries are not dependent on the rest of the world to support their economy. They don't have to keep borrowing money. So their central banks are not going to be under this enormous pressure to keep printing money and to keep lowering interest rates. Other central banks will be able to be more responsible or maybe less irresponsible than the Fed. But also, in reference to your point, that is the main reason that I have opted to encourage clients to buy more foreign stocks than foreign bonds, because I like to own real things like property and utilities and infrastructure, real stuff, because then we don't have to worry about inflation in other countries because we have real things. And as it turns out, right now, that strategy is not working out as well because equities are under a lot of pressure worldwide. A lot of people are selling right now because of the deleveraging process. A lot of people are raising cash. And so in the short run, a lot of these conservative-type foreign stocks that we've been buying have had declines in price much greater than I would have expected because these declines are unprecedented for these types of stocks. But what's also unprecedented is the sheer volume of selling. You have a whole world of leveraged speculators all trying to get out the same door at the same time. Everybody's selling the same stocks, and the prices are collapsing. But once the deleveraging is over and the forced selling is gone, I expect these stocks to rise sharply very quickly because nobody would sell these stocks at these prices unless they had to. And that's how when gentlemen can say, hey, my account's down 50%, right? Now I have to double to get even. That could take me 7 or 8 years to get my money back. It ain't going to happen. You know, these stocks collapsed in a few months. not because there were any problems with the companies. And that's a big difference. See, our stocks, this is not true for 100% of our stocks, but the overwhelming majority of our stocks are going down not because of any problems at the company. It's because the shareholders are in trouble. The people who own these stocks needed the money and they had to sell. And so the companies are fine. It's just the shareholders who are not fine. And so when those leveraged shareholders are forced out of the stocks, all of a sudden there's nobody left to sell anymore, and prices are going to take off. And the prices will move back up to a real level that takes into consideration the underlying value of the business and the dividend yield they're paying. So I don't think it's going to take 6 or 7 years for stocks that have gone down by 50% to double. I think they can double in a couple of months. So I don't think this is going to be something where we're going to be waiting and waiting and waiting. But you know what? Even if we have to wait, we are collecting our dividends. And that was the whole reason for setting up a portfolio of dividend-paying stocks, so that we didn't have to worry about the short-term price because we're not selling. We're owning the stocks to collect the dividends. I mean, right. Most of the stocks I'm buying for people, I mean, they can take them to the grave and they can leave them to their children. I mean, we're buying them because of the income. We don't have to sell. We don't need a capital gain because the return is the dividend.
Okay, well, I'm not selling. No reason for me to sell and lose half of what I put in 3 months ago. But I'm going to stick it out. With that being said, where is this money going to come from? The stimulus package, the bankers are hoarding all that money, and they're clearly...
Where's what money going to come from?
Well, this $700 billion bailout, when...
Oh, that money is just being printed out of thin air. I mean, either we borrow it from China and Japan or we print it. But either way, we're screwed. I mean, this is terrible for the dollar. It's terrible for the country. And, you know, everything the government is doing now is exactly what I was afraid they would do. It's exactly what I wrote they would do in Crash Proof. And it's exactly why we have our money invested the way we do. Okay. And in the end, the strategies that we have, I think, are going to produce the best results.
All right. Well, one quick question.
Anyway, let me thank you for the call, because I think I'm going about 10 minutes left. I think I still have a couple of callers left, two or three. All right. Thanks. Let me go to, is it Dan next in Canada?
No, this is Gil.
Oh, Gil in Texas? Okay, go ahead, Gil.
Texas, yeah. And I want to thank you for your program and for your insight, and you're having the courage and the good sense to
put out. Well, let me just take a quick note. Let's take no more calls because I'm running out of time. I'll get to all the callers on hold, but let's have no more calls tonight. Anyway, go ahead, Gil.
By the way, besides Crash Proof, what is the other book that you wrote?
Well, I only wrote two. Crash Proof was the first one, but I just had a new book that came out called The Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets.
Okay.
And, of course, all the bull moves that I predicted haven't actually begun yet. I mean, it's still, although unless you count today, but so far it's kind of been bear moves and bear markets. But I'm confident that, you know, over the long run, which I don't think is going to be that long, all these bull moves are going to pan out. So it's a good little book to get. In fact, I have some clients that came into the office today. They said they tried to buy it at a Borders and they were already sold out. The books have been selling number one and number two on Amazon. I know a lot of bookstores have them, but if you go to your bookstore and they don't have it, I mean, really, you got to talk to the manager. But these books are big-selling books. In fact, I think the little book came out as number 9 on USA Today's bestseller list.
Okay. Does your company have different branches, or are you all central located in one place?
No, we've got 6 branches right now, but we are in talks to open up quite a few more branches in other cities. But right now, the closest branch to you in Texas would probably be either the Phoenix branch or, you know, the two branches in Southern California. But I do have plans sometime probably within the next year to open up an office in that area, maybe in Dallas or in Houston or maybe
both. Yeah, Houston would be a good location for that. Some gentleman called one of the most important stations in Texas, KLBJ in Austin, and really complimented you on that you were the only one that called the crash. So you're really getting known very well. I've worked in the Middle East a lot, all over the Middle East, even Iran, Egypt, I've been in Israel, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. And I want to tell you, the people in Saudi Arabia will listen to you very carefully, intently, and what you have to say to them is very, very valuable. And they will appreciate it enormously, and I think it's going to be very much worth your while. They don't get a good press. The Arabs do not get a good press over here. And perhaps in some cases they deserve it, but they are very courteous, very fair-minded, and I think it's going to be an extremely valuable and worthwhile trip for you. I wish you the very best, and they will be very, really, they're intelligent, and they like to use their money sensibly, and they will they will reward you tremendously, I promise you. I'm sure they will. And I do not have an account with you. And the gentleman that called earlier, very concerned. You know, if you have good common sense and mature, what you're explaining makes very darn good sense. And I have no account with you right now. I don't see why man was...
This is a great time to open one up. I mean, it's not as great as one a couple of days ago. But it's fantastic. I mean, I never would have thought we would have been able to buy stocks of the quality of the companies that we're buying at these kind of valuations. And on the eve of the collapse of the dollar, that the dollar had this ridiculous rally, the dead cat bounce of all dead cat bounces, is a wonderful opportunity for people to get out of the dollar. And all I can say is take advantage of it while you can, because I don't expect it to last.
By the way, is your father Irwin Schiff?
Yes, he still is.
Well, please give him the thanks from many Americans for battling and exposing the corrupt IRS for what it is. Mm-hmm. And he had some rough rides, but it takes the kind of commitment and courage that he showed. It's going to take that for Americans to get their country back.
Yeah, I
wish you and your father the very best. And have a great trip. You'll have a great trip to the Middle East.
The last call for the evening will be Steve from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, how come you did not see the yen carry trade unwinding coming our way?
Well, the yen carry trade has been unwinding. I expected the yen carry trade to unwind in the context of the yen gaining a lot of strength against all the other currencies, but I still expected it to happen within the confines of a weaker dollar, which is one of the reasons that we had a lot of exposure to Asian currencies. I expected the unwinding of the carry trade to also lift other Asian currencies. But what actually happened is the carry trade is being unwound as all the other currencies are actually falling. So the yen is going up against the dollar, but other currencies have been falling. But we'll see. I mean, I think there's going to be a continued unwind, but I ultimately think that you're going to see this happening as the dollar sinks against everything. But I was surprised at the magnitude of the rally of the dollar. I really didn't think we would see the Australian dollar move from almost parity with the U.S. dollar to under 60 cents. I mean, I really didn't see that coming. I mean, a 40% drop in the Australian dollar in a matter of a couple of months, it's just something that I wouldn't have even planned for. But I don't think these moves in the dollar are sustainable. Yeah.
Okay, and if all the liquidity is getting sucked out of all the global markets right now, why do you think the liquidity will flow back into it? I mean, if all these hedge funds are taking the money out where the P/E ratios were 30 and 35 for good companies were normal, maybe going forward, P/E ratios of 5 and 10 for good companies will become normal because...
ultimately, it doesn't matter about the liquidity
available.
Ultimately, it's what's going to happen is people are going to look at stocks and their yields versus interest rates and their yields. And if you got very low interest rates all around the world, it's not going to take a lot of buying to put these stocks much higher. It's just going to take an absence of sellers. And once the sellers are gone, right, stock prices can move up dramatically on just very, very little volume because ultimately prices are going to have to reflect the yields on these assets and relative to yields in other asset classes. And as long as, if interest rates move up dramatically around the world, then that would suppress stock PEs. But as long as interest rates are as low as they are right now, there's no reason for stocks to be trading at these huge yields. It just doesn't make any sense. And it won't stay there once all the desperate sellers and all the margin calls and liquidation is over. Once people make a rational choice, should I have a stock with a 20% yield or a money market with a 2% yield? People will choose 20%, but then there won't be any people dumb enough because nobody's going to want to sell their 20% yielding stock and take the money and put it in the bank and get 2%. So the market will come back up to a normal price. But these are not normal times right now. Everybody is selling indiscriminately. Nobody is buying. And, you're able to buy prices dirt cheap. It's like a foreclosure. If you go and buy a house in a foreclosure, it's not a normal transaction. You get it. The price is very, very cheap. Right now it's like all these stocks are in the foreclosure sale. The prices are crazy. But once we get a normal market, we'll get normal prices. But anyway, thank you for the call. I'm running out of time here.
Rather than dollars.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. Anyway, we'll be back again next week at this time. In the meantime, we'll see what happens if the following week Now that the Fed has reduced interest rates to 1%, now that we potentially had a reversal in the dollar, we'll see if the dollar continues to lose strength. I said watch the 82 level of the dollar index for support. If it breaks that, then we might go back below 80. I think if we break 80, then the dollar rally is done. And I would look for a very sharp decline in the dollar to continue throughout all of next year. I still maintain that the dollar index will be go down to 40 at a minimum by the end of this at the end of this thing. Anyway, you see a doorbell ringing. I had some Chinese food coming, and it'll be here at 9 o'clock to coincide with the end of the show. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. I'll be here again next week. Remember to call 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Pick up a copy of the little book of bull moves in bear markets, and make sure to tune in again at www.europac.net. So long.